Anita, how's your mental health?
Questionable at all times, you know this.
Yeah, how's the mental health of your children?
Also a little bit tricky. Can I tell you my experience in trying to find therapists for myself and my kids, Mel?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is how it goes. You ask around your friends and your family for a referral for somebody who's nearby. You finally find somebody who sounds like they might work for your family. You give them a call and you find out that A, they're not accepting new patients, or B, they have a huge wait list. So you start over again and you ask people if they know anybody who would be a good therapist and a good fit. Finally, you find one, you go and you meet with them, and you figure out that you don't actually like them that much. But it's been so much work to find somebody who you can go to in your area that you're kind of stuck with them. Well, do you have any ideas for how to get around this?
I do because guess what? I've actually had some therapists that I have found on my own, which involves what you're saying. Sometimes I remember one time I was like 3 hours in the bathtub on my phone looking through websites. I was such a prune at the end. But I have also had the experience with working with BetterHelp, and it was like I don't want to say too good to be true, but because it is true, but it's like amazing because I was matched with my therapist within 24 hours.
And you didn't have to go through all of that other ridiculous process of trying to find somebody. And here's the cool thing, too, is if that person didn't work out for you, you can just switch and say, and it's not like you're committing to another years long search for somebody who you're going to jive with.
That's true. And I lucked out, or maybe just BetterHelp is really good at matching people together because I never had to change my therapist. I loved her, perfect fit for me. And I know that some of our friends have used BetterHelp and they've had to change therapists, and boom, same day, you can change.
Easy
You can ghost your therapist, get a
peasy.
new one.
I love this idea. BetterHelp is one of our sponsors. If you use our promo code trybetterhelp.com/WWDN, you get 10% off your first month, and we totally recommend it.
Yes, get some therapy. That's
Ha.
trybetterhelp.com/WWDN.
It's a special day, is it not?
Sure is.
How old are thee today, Mel?
That's a tricky question. Do you mean according to the government, or according to how I feel inside, or according to my life experiences? Because all three of those are different numbers.
Different numbers. We'll give us all three.
96, 42, 10.
Is that your locker combination?
Oh, I don't even remember. Do you remember yours?
No, I can't even remember anything.
Happy birthday to me on this day, though. It's not my birthday on the day this comes out because Anita's leaving.
Yeah, I'm going out of town in like 27 minutes. So we're going to record this and then I'm going to skedaddle.
Okay, we'll get this done. Anita, I love your dedication to the word of the widow. Thank you for being here in time to record this and then leave.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll have a good time. When this comes out, I think the next day is supposed to be the solar eclipse, because this should come out Monday, right?
Yeah.
And the weather forecast right now is terrible. We're not supposed to be able to see anything. So I'm so mad. I'm like, we are flying to go see it. No,
Oh,
we're not
you
even going to
guys are
see
all
it. Maybe
flying?
I'll be wrong. Yeah, we're flying to Texas. I'm not driving to Texas. That's too far.
It's a long
It's
drive.
like a million hours. Yeah, we're flying.
Okay,
And
well.
there's going to be no eclipse. We're going to get eclipsed on the eclipse.
Matt.
It's fine.
It's on brand. I love it. I mean, I hate that for
Well,
you, but sorry. Meat
it's
is
kind of
for
funny.
man. Can we like actually for my birthday present today, can we please resurrect the story of meat is for man? Please tell everybody why that's a saying.
Yes. So I'm going to Dallas, and my little sister lives in Texas. She doesn't live in Dallas, but that's where she got married. And my whole family, well, not my whole family, not my kids, but my siblings and my parents all went to Texas for her wedding, and Mel gave us a recommendation for a barbecue place. And we're there. I said, "Hey, Mel told us to go to this barbecue place. What was it called? Pecan Street? Is
Pecan Lodge
that
or
right?"
Pecan Lodge, depending on where you are from.
So we went to it, and we got our order, and we sit down, and we start eating. My dad goes, "Meat is for man."
Just in the restaurant.
This is in the restaurant. Yeah. And I texted Mel immediately. I was like, oh my goodness, Randy is loving the barbecue. He just yelled out, meat is for man.
Did people hear him and what was their reaction?
No, it wasn't loud enough for that. It was just like our table. But yeah, I have a feeling that we'll be visiting the meat is for man joint.
I wish everybody in the world knew Randy Randall. He's the best in the whole world. He's like my favorite old man friend of all of my old man friends. Sorry, other old man friends. He's the best.
He wanted me yesterday to look at his CPAP and go over the settings with him. I have no knowledge of CPAPs.
He has a CPAP?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he loves his CPAP. He's having an affair with his CPAP. He loves it so much. But he's like going over all of the settings and I'm like, oh, yeah, that looks good. He's like, what's this one? I'm like Googling it. I'm like, I don't know. Anyway, it was funny.
Wow. Well, is he going with you?
They are coming with us, but they're coming a couple days later. So
can you please go to Pecan/Pecan Lodge, reenact Meat is for Man?
I will try. I think it shouldn't be that hard, but we'll see.
So you guys all, if you have listened to this many episodes at this point, you'll know sometime last year into this year, Randy Randall has become my skateboard roller skate builder friend after Anita helped me with the first initial ramp. And so sometimes
and then
Randy,
he fixed it.
Yeah, he fixed what we messed up. But so anyway, sometimes I call him. And one time I called him and he was like, hey, bud. And I thought, I was like, I've made it. Now we're best friends. Yeah. So anyway, he's helped me a lot with things.
He got your nose ring out once.
Yeah, he did get my nose ring out once. And I think he had great glee in that. That was fun for him and painful for me. But I was so grateful for him because it was 6:30 a.m. One time I was like, Randy Randall has been such a good friend for me. I'm going to give him a gift card to a place where there's meat. Because meat is for man. And so I did. I went to the barbecue store, restaurant, whatever, and got him a gift certificate. And then I put it in a card and then I wrote in a card and I drew a picture of me and Randy. And then on it, it said, meat is for man. And I gave it to him and he looked at it and he was like, huh? And then like, that was it. It was so funny. And then it was like 2 weeks later and he's like, oh, Mel, I didn't realize that there was things in the card. Thank you.
I'm surprised he didn't throw it away right in your presence. Well, like, oh, thanks.
If he had thrown away, he would have thrown away like, $50 worth of meat for man.
I know. That would have been a tragedy.
Yeah.
So we can't have that. I will report, Mel, as soon as I have any news.
Keep the video camera rolling. Please. Okay.
Oh, all right. Well, today I'm excited about our episode because this is our death. Actually, it's Deeth 2.0. Can I tell them the Deeth story, Mel?
Yes.
So once upon a time, Mel and I went to Universal Studios and it was hot and we were tired and you have to wait in line for a long time. And our phones were almost out of battery and even our external charger batteries were almost out of batteries. And so we had to make the difficult decision to not play on our phones. Guys, that's really hard.
Yeah.
So we invented the brilliant game of analog Wordle. Do you want to explain how you play analog Wordle, Mel?
Yes. So anybody that's played regular Wordle, digital Wordle, knows that you have five letters and then you guess words and then the game tells you, like, if it's yellow, one of the letters is yellow, you have a correct letter in the wrong spot. Green means you have a correct letter in the right spot. White is nothing. So we thought we would just use our hands because we have five fingers. And then we would each pick a word while we were standing in line. And when the other would guess, we would just hold out a hand and point to each finger as we would go along and be like, yellow, like middle finger yellow or thumb is green. So that's how we did this for hours.
Yes. So one of the times I picked the word death. And we were in Gringotts Bank and we were going, Mel was just really struggling. We went through every letter of every, and she just was not figuring it out. She had like D green, E green, A not, T green, H green. And she just could not figure it out. So finally, she figures out the A and she goes, Deeth?
I was like, sheath, bequeath, like making a word. And it was death. Yes. But I could not spell or pronounce death. It's Deeth. And so now that's why we call things Deeth.
Yeah. So anyway, that was neither here nor there. But we're doing our Deeth 2.0 episode today, and I'm super excited about it. I had so much fun last time, and hopefully this time too.
I'm excited to hear more research. Oh, also, I'm Anita. I'm Mel. Welcome to What Do We Do Now? All right, Anita, how are we doing this?
Okay. So first, I want to follow up with some of the stuff we talked about in our last episode. If you guys haven't heard that episode, go back and check it out. It's Deeth 1.0 and this is Deeth 2.0. It's episode 192.
It's episode 192. It's called Detective Anita Cracking the Death Industry Code. Go listen to that first. And now we will usher in the second wave of Deeth with Detective Anita.
So we had a couple people respond to that episode talking about their personal experiences, and that was really interesting. One thing that was super helpful was from our friend Jen O'Brien. She has an episode at some point in time, J2, and she sent us a couple resources that I wanted to share. So she said that we should check out the website www.funeralocity. So funeralocity.com. And that takes you to a website where you punch in your zip code and it provides the average, low, and high prices for like different kinds of disposition packages. So she said that when her dad died, it was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. She looked at what the price should be on funeralocity.com. And then when she called up the different funeral homes, some of them were way more than that. And she said this in her email. When I mentioned they were twice or more what funeralocity.com said, they responded, what's funeralocity.com? And then said, well, you don't want to skimp on your loved one, which infuriated me. We talked about that, how they try and make you feel like if you don't spend a lot of money, then you're not, quote unquote, taking care of your person.
Yeah.
Anywho. That's
uncool.
So she called a couple different places and she did end up finding a place that was meeting the average. So I found that very interesting. Mm. And there were some people who responded to questions or comments about the price of urns and caskets. So I did a little bit of a dive into why caskets are so expensive and a little bit more about that. So in the last 30 years, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says that the price of caskets has skyrocketed a 250% increase. Mm. So it has outpaced the inflation rate for other consumer products by more than double.
Wow.
Caskets, why do they cost so much? Is it just because they're made of amazing materials?
No.
Or is it because... you were right. No, don't be quiet. That's good. No, it's good. Or is it because they have a captive audience?
Yes.
And who aren't even going to know that they can shop around, or they're just going to pick whatever you put in front of them, right?
Yes. Because you're grieving and someone's dead and you're like, I don't know and I don't care. And maybe they care because they're dead and now they're watching me somehow. And so I have to make the right decision for them, but they're dead.
Yes. And it's not like in our brains. I mean, we're kind of programmed that maybe if you go look for a couch and the couch is really expensive at this store, well, I know I can go to the other furniture store and maybe it will be cheaper there. We're not really programmed because there's not like a casket store down the street. But it's just like in our minds, we're not really programmed to think about it that way. There are laws that say that you do not have to purchase the casket from the funeral home that you use.
Really?
Really. And the funeral home is not allowed to penalize you for using a casket from another company.
Ah.
So do you know what the funeral home that we used did?
Told you lies?
No.
Didn't even tell you that.
No, they didn't tell us that. I think that They do probably what a lot of places do is that they don't penalize you for using an outside company, but if you use their supplier, you get a discount. Mm-hmm. So they've marked up the whole situation in the first place and then give you a discount. So Costco sells caskets.
So weird.
And I know, but you can get them from way cheaper. Then there are two basic huge companies that control 90% or about 90%. I think it's like 80% of caskets, and it's Batesville and Matthews. And because they're like the only ones or the big ones that make them, they can mark up the caskets however much they want.
Where so, are these places? Batesville?
I think it's in Indiana. I don't know about the other one.
I was going to say, like, what if it's the Bates Motel? That would be perfect. Hitchcock.
Yes, maybe. Maybe they're like making them, the mom is making them in the back room. Wasn't that the deal? Is the mom, like, he still had his mom's body?
Yeah.
Something
and then
like
he
that.
Was pretending to be her. I don't even know. Munchausen by proxy.
Just a quick FYI, there are metal caskets and there's wooden caskets.
Huh.
And the metal caskets, they are rated by gauge. So it'll be like 12 gauge, 18 gauge.
This is like my nose ring. 22 gauge, 18 gauge.
But the weird thing is that the smaller the gauge, the thicker the metal. I did not find a lot of information about urns for ashes, for cremains, but I think the same thing holds true, that if you buy a container and it's called an urn, they can charge you whatever the heck they want because you're desperate and you're going to buy it. I mean, you can put somebody in a coffee tin and it has the same properties. You know, it's not like, it's not like it's doing anything other than being beautiful.
It's
decorative.
Just there. Yes.
So, anyway, that's a whole nother can of worms, can of ashes that we could get into that I don't have a lot of information on.
Great. All right. What's next?
Okay, Mel. So now we're going to start talking a little bit more about, we talked a little bit about aquamation. That's kind of where we ended last time. And I want to talk to you about some other ways that you can have your body disposed.
I want to first, can we please start talking about the body farm?
No, I'm going to make you wait.
Ah!
So, I know. I'm sorry, Mel. Last time I had mentioned that you can have your body freeze-dried and then exploded.
That just sounds fun.
Well, I mean, you're dead. But I found out what it's called. It's called promession.
Fun for somebody.
Fun for somebody. Yeah.
Promession. How do you spell that?
P-R-O-M-E-S-S-I-O-N. I don't think it's widely available, but it sounds kind of cool.
You know those freeze dryers our moms have? Could those work?
Oh my gosh. I had a conversation like about this with my little brother. We talked about a lot of this stuff. And my mom and Mel's mom have a freeze dryer. The freeze dryer has a schedule. Okay. If you want something in the freeze dryer, you have to schedule it a month in advance at least. So we were laughing about that. And I was like, think about how small you would have to cut up your body first. And then get it in the schedule. So I don't think that's really a viable plan. Like, I think the law looks down on that too.
It's like a little bit too Jeffrey Dahmer centric for me.
Yeah.
But with an extra step.
Yeah.
All right. So promession. All right. That's
promession.
Festive.
Yeah. There's also companies who are putting ashes in fireworks and then shooting you into the sky. That sounds fun, don't you think?
Yeah.
For
the person doing it.
There's a company that I don't really understand why this is helpful or useful, but they are putting ashes. They're like forming coral reefs with the ashes, like the structure, and then the coral grows on that framework. And so then you're like in the ocean helping the coral reefs. Yes.
Anita, is it like digital? No. Is it like 3D printing of your ashes, putting it on a coral reef and creating?
I don't know.
How did you learn this?
Just Googling interest, like different ways.
You think it's true?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a high likelihood that when they advertise it, it doesn't actually work like they say it's going to. Like, they can't guarantee that the coral is going to grow on that structure. I don't think so.
They protected, like, the Great Barrier Reef is a protected thing, or?
Yeah. But there are coral reefs that aren't protected. Okay. So I didn't find out where specifically they do this and how, but it sounds like an interesting.
Coral reefs for peasants.
Yeah. Sounds interesting because our coral reefs are dying. So people want to feel like they're helping.
Okay.
We know because we had our guest Min Hee, who was the glassblower, mm-hmm. that people will incorporate ashes into glass and art of some sort. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later, but that's cool. Another option. Have you ever been to Body Works?
Is that like the body show?
Yeah, it's like
traveling.
Yeah. So that's called plastination, and you donate your body. And when they embalm you, they remove the fluid and they inject plastic.
Ooh.
I don't understand how some scientists figured out how to do it. So you retain the same, everything exactly like it is before, but now you're plastic. So those shows are so wild.
Yeah.
And cool. And they like dissect out different parts of your body to show off, you know, different either pieces,
features.
Yeah. Or, you know, they'd be like, this person has a total hip and a total knee and a fake ankle. And this is what it looks like when it's inside of your body. And they're all in these cases.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I never had been to one, but you've been to one of those shows?
Yeah. I've seen it where they like dissected out the nervous system of a body, which is wild.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. It must have taken a thousand million hours. But
I have to Google it right now because that is... What would you Google? Dissected?
Yeah. Nervous system?
Wow. Wow, you guys. Okay, if you are like me and Anita and things don't gross you out, I mean, this shouldn't. It just looks like a fossil. But that's wild. It looks like an outfit. A skeleton like with an outfit.
Yeah, like lacy almost, because it goes off into these little branches.
It's like the kind of feathers that Janice from the Muppets has on her boa, but on her legs and her arms.
Sometimes we assume that unless we had a huge life insurance payout, we don't really need to know anything about investments or even finances. But guess what? A little knowledge of finances is critical for all of us. Maybe your partner was in charge of that stuff, and now you find yourself making all the decisions. Maybe you're mad about that. Maybe I am. Nicole from the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast is here to help. She tackles financial literacy by telling the stories of women and widows and finance experts and shares the lessons they've learned as certified financial planners. Whether you know a lot and feel confident in your financial decisions or feel unsure about all of that stuff, there is more to learn. Listen and subscribe to the He's Gone But the Money's Not podcast on all podcast platforms. This ad was paid for by Rockhouse Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Oh, man, that took me to a place I did not expect.
You're welcome. I'm here for you.
There's also human composting, where they have you decay naturally, and then you're turned into compost that you can use in your garden or elsewhere.
If my mom didn't believe in just burial, I know she would do that one.
Yeah.
Composting.
Okay. So the next one. And I think, I'm not sure if it perfected yet, but there is a company in Japan that is taking your DNA and putting it into a tree. They're transposing your DNA into a tree, and then they plant the tree. It's called transgenic tombstones.
I thought you were going to say transgender tombstones, first of all. And then second of all, I hear that we share DNA with trees anyway. So there are similar... There's similar coding. Yeah. Did you know that? Let's Google that too.
I did not know that. But I'm not surprised, because actually, like most alive things, their DNA is pretty close.
Mm-hmm. I think it's about 60%, but I have not read research articles currently, so it could be plus or minus 60% of that. 50%? 60%.
So they call it a living memorial.
70% with slugs. We share more DNA with slugs than trees. Just thought you should know. Okay, continue.
Yeah, that's good to know. I think it'd be so rad if my DNA made apples, because you guys love apples, and then you can be an apple tree.
Then somebody could eat you and digest you.
Yes.
And you go back into the earth.
And poop me out.
And then dogs eat you.
And think of me fondly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many choices. Okay, Mel, now we're going to talk about the body farm.
Oh, I've waited for this for like 3 weeks. Tell me everything.
Okay, so the body farm, the first one was opened in 1981. And there was this guy, he was a forensic anthropologist. And he, I think it was at the University of Tennessee. And I think that was the first one. And they had this little kind of parking lot area that they would take bodies that were donated and they would put them in different scenarios and then study how they decomposed. And the purpose of this was to help with solving either crime or maybe like even an accident if they were to find human remains, to try and decide how old the person was, or how long, not how old they were, how long they had been in those conditions.
Yes.
So they will take bodies and put them in garbage bags and bury them in like swampy conditions or in the back of a trunk of a car or bury them in cement. And then they go back and study and see how they decompose in those certain conditions. So then they have kind of a baseline. If they ever find somebody, they can say, well, this person has been dead for 8 weeks, 2 weeks, 1 month, whatever.
You know what I want to use mine for? First of all, definitely sending my body to a body farm as of right now, this minute. And I would like for them to bury me deep in the ground when they're trying to get better technology on ground penetrating radar. So that when they are, when law enforcement is trying to find buried bodies or even like in cement, you know, in foundations of buildings, like deeper, or like further technology would be needed for that. I would volunteer my body for that. I'm sure you can't choose, but I feel like that would be so cool. Because then it would help find murder victims that were buried places.
Yeah. Yeah. So now there's body farms. They don't call them the body farms. That's like the name of the one place. But now there are other forensic anthropology research facilities in, they have 8 of them now. And there are, I think they said that there's one that's opening in Australia and there might be one in Canada. So now there's just a bunch of them. The closest one to us, I think, is in Colorado.
Is there a wait list?
I understand that there is. However, since more of them are opening, I'm not sure if that will change how that works. And I don't know how one gets onto the list. If you have to apply for each of the different facilities or if there's one list to rule them all.
Would you do it when before you die?
Yes, yes, yes. This is something that the person has to donate themselves to.
I'm going to Google it right now while you're talking.
I don't think you can donate a family member, although maybe.
How to get on body farm waitlist. And the first thing that came up was University of Tennessee at Knoxville. Body donation, frequently asked question. Oh, they keep them for 3 years.
Oh.
Here's my deep research I just did right now from University of Tennessee. Number one, as a donor to your program, what happens when I die? How do you know when I die? And how will my body get to your facility? We will be contacted by your family or physician if they are aware of your wishes. After we determine acceptance to the program, transportation arrangements should be made with a funeral home by your family. If beyond our 100-mile limit, please be aware that we cannot remove your body from hospice facilities, nursing homes, or private residences, so a funeral home will need to be called, even if the death occurs within 100 miles of Knoxville. We will transport your body to our facility from a hospital, funeral home, or medical examiner office within 100 miles of Knoxville. Okay. What happens to my body after it is donated? Once we receive a donor, we assign an identifying number and place the donor at the Anthropology Research Facility. It's called ARF.
ARF.
ARF, our outdoor lab for research and training. All donations go to the ARF and are allowed to decompose naturally. Once the body is skeletonized, we recover the skeletal remains and clean them. The clean bones are accessioned into the UTK donated skeletal collection and are labeled with the identifying number. At this step, the remains are inventoried, measured, and other data collected. Anita, am I talking about the wrong thing? Because that doesn't make sense, because they're, if it's just skeletal remains.
Well, so they let you decompose in the wild until you're just a skeleton. And then I think they get you and clean up the bones and take you to like a museum type place.
Oh, okay. After they do their tests.
Yeah. So like if they leave you out in the open for 3 years or until you're a skeleton, and then.
This one, there's a question people ask if they can, if they fill out the paperwork to donate the body, can they visit the research facility first? And can I pick out where I want to be placed upon my death? Basically, the answer is no, but you can make a special request regarding placement of your body after death. For instance, I do not wish to be buried or placed in water. 4, do I have to be pre-registered to donate my body? Not necessarily. Your family can contact us after your death to make arrangements. The acceptance of unregistered individuals is considered on a case-by-case basis. If I decide to donate my body after my death, should I put this in my will? And this says you may put this in your will, but it is not necessary. One's will is typically read after the funeral when it would be too late to make donation arrangements. Please make sure your family and friends know what your wishes are prior to your death. And then it says, what's the difference between the body donation program and a medical school donation program? This one is an anthropology program and uses the donors for research and teaching in the field of decomposition and skeletal anatomy. And they don't return any of the domain or any of the remains to the donor family. And they do not embalm it. Medical schools typically embalm the body so they can teach anatomy to the medical students. And then after that, the donor body can be cremated or returned. Here's your body back.
No, I have something to say about that.
Okay. Go.
Oh, so when I was in physical therapy school, one of the things we did was dissected cadavers. And one of the things we were instructed on is that anything that we removed went into a bucket that was next to the table. So as we dissected, we went from a whole body, and then we cut it open and looked at, you know, the muscles and the bones and the nerves and all of the different things, the tendons. If we removed a piece of that body, it went into a bucket. And then at the end, when we were all done dissecting it, they cremated all of the remains at the same time and then gave all of the remains back to the family. So even the little pieces that were in the bucket, they all get returned to the family in one piece of ashes, if that makes sense.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It also says you can still be an organ and a tissue donor and be a part of this program. So,
oh,
you just can't donate skeletal tissue. So bone.
Interesting. Huh. This I didn't know
very,
that part.
Very interesting. Well, I'm going to look into that for sure.
It's interesting, huh?
Yes. Thank you telling me about it.
It used to be kind of a secret because people thought that was gross. But now that true crime is super huge and everybody loves it, it's like, oh, no, we're going to talk about this. And we got donations and we're making more of them. So that's really, I don't know. It's intriguing to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Next.
So we're going to shift focus now and talk a little bit about some of the different burial practices of different places around the world and historical burial practices, which are super interesting. And man, Mel, are we boring in the way we bury people around here?
Seriously, so boring.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of the other options that people have done over the millennia, and some still do it. A lot of these practices aren't done anymore, which is kind of, I feel like, unfortunate. We talked a little bit about Tanah Toraja in Indonesia last time, and we're not going to repeat that, but there's some other interesting burial practices. So the first thing I think of when I think about historic burial situations is the catacombs. Have you been to France?
Yes. But not to catacombs. No, but I've been to the catacombs. I've been to the catacombs at the Vatican, under the Vatican.
Oh, see, okay. These are the two famous, these are the two famous catacombs. And the catacombs in Rome came first. And they are called the catacombs because that means next to the quarry. And they, the early Christians who weren't going to burn bodies needed a place to be buried, but land was super expensive. And so they came up with this idea that they would build tunnels and that they would, they wrapped the bodies in shrouds and put them in the tunnels and then sealed off certain areas to let them decompose. So there's like tons and tons of miles of these catacombs in Rome. And then they weren't discovered for many, many, many years. And now we know about them. But if you go into the Roman catacombs, there are no remaining bones. Like they've all decomposed and are gone. So then there's the catacombs in France, which a lot of people go down and look at. And those are very like spooky and, you know, because they lined the tunnels with the bones. And I learned that the Parisian catacombs were not burial sites to begin with. So they had dug these quarries for other purposes, getting rocks. I don't know why you dig a quarry, but that's what they did. And then at the beginning, well, the end of the 1700s, they were having health problems, like public health problems related to the cemeteries. So King Louis the somethingth ordered ordered that all of the cemeteries, the people be dug up and the bones be transferred into the catacombs. So that's why they're all stacked like that, is because, and they did it at night so people wouldn't be mad that they were digging up their people. They dug up the bones, took them down into the catacombs, and, you know, stacked all of the bones like you can go see nowadays.
That's so interesting.
Yes. Huh. I have never been to either of those catacombs, but I'll put it on my list.
Well, maybe we could take a work trip there.
I don't think that's a bad idea.
Would you guys like to consider supporting us on Patreon? We can make the podcast from a catacomb one time.
Yes. I would appreciate that.
We'll send video. Okay. We'll give you content, all the content you want.
If you want to join us at the catacombs via video, and then maybe we can have some French barbecue and we can put that up. Just joking.
Patreon.com/WWDN. Okay, what's next?
Okay. So the next thing we're going to talk about is hanging coffins.
Ooh.
So these are found in different locations, China, Indonesia, the Philippines. The hanging coffins are attached to the sides of cliffs as a part of ancient funeral customs of minority groups. So they come in three types. There are some that are cantilevered out of wooden stakes and like hanging. And then there are some that sit in caves, kind of on the side of rock faces, and then that are kind of balanced on projections out of the rock. And some of these can still be found in China.
Very interesting.
Which is super interesting. It reminds me of, have you ever gone to Mesa Verde National Park?
Yes, but a long time ago.
It's like the people lived on in the cliffs. They like dug out or found the little cave places and just lived in there. It's wild.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. And how the wood that they used for the coffins, at some point in time that would decompose. And then would the body fall out? I don't know.
No.
What happened after that?
I don't know.
Okay. So the next, I don't know how to say a lot of these things, you guys, so I'm really sorry. The Ifugao death chair.
Death chair.
Is a form of mourning the deceased by the Ifugao people.
Not to be confused with the electric chair. This is definitely different.
So depending on the rank of the person in the society, they would, the corpse would be placed in a sitting position in a specific chair. And the people who are fancier would be there for 13 to 15 days and just a few days for commoners. And then after they were sat in the chair, they would be transferred to the gravesite near the mountains and they would be buried in the sitting position covered with stones and rocks.
Buried sitting up.
Yeah.
How far down would they dig?
I don't know.
Past 6 feet, or would their head
be
like
poking out of the dirt. I don't think so, but I almost wonder if, as they were sitting there for that long, if their body kind of decided that that's what position it was going to be in. Although, no, the next group of people, I'm super fascinated about. My brother and I had a whole conversation about these people.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the Zoroastrians?
No.
No?
What are they?
They're a religion. Now they are in, I think, Iran and India. They're still Zoroastrians who are alive and practicing. And their prophet or their deity, his name is Zarathustra, which the only reason I'd ever heard that word is because there is a classical music called also Sprach Zarathustra. Have you ever heard
what?
That?
No, I've never heard these words in my life.
I was counting on you, Mel, to know also Sprach Zarathustra.
Okay, it is classical. I have to say, like, that's definitely above my pay grade, or to the side of my pay grade.
To the side. It's not above.
I can tell you about John Coltrane any day.
He's not old enough to have written also Sprach Zarathustra. And I don't know. I'm going to have to ask my mom, because that's how I know about that. I don't even know why I know this, but if it has anything to do with Zoroastrians or why there's a song called that. I think it's Richard Strauss. Do you know who that is?
I do know who that is, yes.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not just making stuff up. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you ready to hear what they did and do?
Yes.
Okay. After the person dies, a dog is brought before the corpse. It should preferably be a four-eyed dog.
excuse me. Where do you find these?
So the dog can have two actual eyeballs and then spots above its eyes is the preferred dog.
Can you paint them on?
I do not know. The spots are said to increase the efficacy of its look.
What does that even mean?
I don't know what it means. Okay.
So who? The dead person? The dead person's is like, I love that this dog has four eyes. I feel so efficacious.
Yes, exactly. That rite is repeated 5 times a day.
And it just they bring the dog to be in front of the corpse, not lick it or anything?
Yes. I don't know. Anything that the body touches is dirty and unclean. So that's a big deal. So after, I don't actually know if this is before the dog is brought 5 times a day or after, but the body and all of the tools that are used are cleaned in bull's urine. Okay.
Wait,
so we have the
what?
dog.
Whose urine?
A bull.
Bull.
Like a male cow.
What if you only have a female cow?
You can't. It decreases the efficacy. I don't know. So the tools that they use to cut the clothes off the body have to be also, they're washed in the bull's urine, but then they have to be destroyed because anything that touches the body is unclean.
What?
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Just remember, Mel, this is totally fine. So then,
I just want to know what happens. What if they have no bull and there's only females?
And what if they don't have a dog with four eyes? I don't know.
What if they only have a cat? Or a jackrabbit?
Or a gecko. I don't know. So then they're taken to a thing called the Tower of Silence. And it is a round. It doesn't look like a tower in the pictures I saw. It more looks like a mound that goes high up. And inside the tower, there are 3 concentric circles. And the male bodies are put on the outermost. Female bodies are put on the center. And then children are put in the center of the 3 concentric circles. And then they are left there. And in the olden days, the vultures would come and eat all of their flesh. And it would take very little time
wow
for the vultures to come and eat them. But then they left the bones for, I think, a long time, like maybe a year, till they were sun bleached and all, no more flesh upon them. And then they were kept in an ossuary to preserve the bones from rain and animals.
Wow.
Yeah. What? Okay, this is the crazy thing, though. I know that was crazy enough, but there are still Zoroastrians who are practicing their religion. And in India, it's a big problem because there are decreasing vulture populations. And so there's not enough vultures to come and eat their remains. And so they're just like sitting and kind of decomposing, and it's a bad public health situation. So they're trying to use like solar panels to heat the bodies up and crows, but it's a, like a public health issue right now.
All right. I do have to say I have experience with some vultures.
What?
Do you remember? It's actually in the podcast when it was right when COVID first started. Remember I was stranded in New York when I was living there and there had been a cat that was like unburied from its grave by an animal, probably one of my dogs. Sorry.
Oops.
And I didn't know that. And I looked out the window and there were these vultures flying overhead and I'd never seen them. And I was like,
and they were
well,
coming
wait
for
a
the
minute.
Cat.
Yes. They can smell from so far away. Would you like to know how long? Cause I can Google it. I'm so good at that today.
Yeah. And do you want to become a Zoroastrian with me, Mel?
Only if you can make sure that it's equal with like equal opportunities for female cows as well as the bulls. And what happens if there's not a dog with four eyes?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not as efficacious as what they told us.
According to the Chattahoochee Nature Center, they can smell over a mile away.
Oh my goodness. Well,
it's
they're not doing their
insane.
Job in India. So,
no. Well,
with the
maybe their population is dying, you know? I think this is pretty epic. Would you like to end there today? Because I know there's more. And I got to really kind of marinate in the situation there, with the bowl.
I have a lot more. Don't ever say that you're going to marinate in the situation.
I'm here for you.
You're welcome. Yeah, we might have to do a part three, Mel, because I have lots of other strange and unusual ways that people in history have been disposed of.
This is very entertaining. Thank you for all your research.
I'm telling you, there's some great ones. Okay, well, now we're going to have to do part three, Deeth.
Okay.
And that will be fine, because why not?
What did you guys think of this episode? Let us know, because maybe you'll write in and we'll know even more and we'll have to do part four, Deeth.
Oh my goodness, there's so much to talk about. Yeah. Well, Mel, I can't wait to tell you more on our next installment.
Me too. And Anita, I say that we make up our own ways for our own bodies.
I sort of think that some of the leaders of these groups of people were doing just that. They were like, hey, let's just make up the most craziest thing that we can think of and see if people will do it. And guess what? They did, but they don't so much anymore.
Mine's going to be like, you have to have a male dog pee on you three times, but then the female dog has to come by and pee on the male dog pee, and then you send it to the body farm, and then shoot it up into space.
I think
with
that sounds
SpaceX.
Great.
That's it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thus it is written.
All right. Well, thanks, Anita, for your devotion to this topic. If any of you need analog Wordle, you're welcome to steal it from us. It might help keep your kids in line at amusement parks or just your friends in line, because we can't function without phones. Duh.
I know. How do we even do that? If you guys want to keep this going, if the podcast has been helpful to you, will you please consider joining our Patreon? Especially because maybe then we'll go to France. Just kidding.
We'd from the catacombs.
Patreon.com/WWDN.
You could buy us tacos, which we could also use as crepes in France while we are in the catacombs filming content for you about Deeth. And that's buymeacoffee.com/widow we do now.
And remember, we gave you some instructions last week. If you go to our Instagram, there is a pinned reel that will help you to change the download settings on your Apple Podcast that will help with what's going on with the new iOS update and how it's affecting podcast downloads. So check that out and help us out doing that. And while you're there, give us a rating and review, a nice one. It really helps people to find us.
And please share the podcast with people who might need it. Even if they're not widows, maybe they are interested in bull urine. You never know. Thank you. And we'll see you again next time. I'm Mel.
I'm Anita. This has been a weird one.
Happy birthday to me.
Widow.
We.
Do.
Bowl.
Now.
Deeth. Okay, bye. This is my favorite thing to discuss with you.
Tell me, what is it?
One of my favorite things. I do enjoy tacos and cheese and dogs. This is about how you cannot pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for a phone plan, especially when you're a widow, your person is dead, you might have kids, you might need another option, and you just want your phone to work, you want unlimited texting and service, and you want it to be like $25 a month.
It blows my mind that they have plans that start at $15 a month. That is so cheap. And the cool thing is it uses other 5G networks, and so you don't have to pay extra for that, and you still get great service.
Yep. Anita and I have traveled all over and I have used my phone. So I highly recommend it. And my mom's even on it. When my dad died, we put his phone down to the cheapest plan, which is $15 a month. And I think my mom's on the $20 a month plan and it's so worth it. It's so much cheaper than what we were all paying before. So I highly recommend it if you're on a budget or not. Who cares? Ryan Reynolds is in charge of the company, and they send you free stickers with Ryan Reynolds temporary tattoos. It's kind of the best. So if somebody wants to sign up, what can they do, Anita?
Go to trymintmobile.com/WWDN. Seriously, you guys, such a great idea. Save yourself some money.
And if you're worried about losing data or having any changes with your phone, not going to happen. They walk you through it. Everything's fine. It's the easiest process of all time. Again, that's
trymintmobile.com/WWDN.